3, 2, 1.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Joe Cristiano, your host, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, America's libertarian voice and independent streaming internet radio station broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma to around the world. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Sunday evening, May 11, 2008. It is now about 8:01 p.m. Central Daylight Time in the good old USA. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Well, good evening, everyone. Welcome to Liberty Talk Radio. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano. During our live broadcast, we invite you to call 646-652-4620. That's 646-652-4620. We have 5 lines. It's Sunday evening. I'd like to hear some of you listeners call in with your opinion, please. At any other time, or you can do this anytime, you can always email us at comments@libertytalkradio.com. I also encourage you to get educated on economic issues. Go to Andy Sutton's website, mytwocentsonline.com. He discusses economic issues and how they affect you. He has an excellent email he emails a newsletter. I think it's twice a month, and it is excellent, folks. It is better written than most. Than mostly all, and I've read just about all of them. He also has a subscription service. It's either $39 or $49 a year, where he gives individual recommendations, and you can use him as a sounding board. You can always email him, and he always gets back to you. I know he does that to me. He is really terrific. But more importantly, we need to know where we stand in these tumultuous economic times. Things are not good. Today, I came back from San Diego this afternoon, had 4 days out there visiting a very good friend of mine who's a commander out there in the naval port out there, and I'll talk to you a little about it later, some of the things that we did and how they relate to this program, It's interesting that I come back and I'm driving home and I don't see many cars on the road, and I'm wondering whether or not this is just I caught the traffic just perfectly, or whether or not the high price of gasoline is in fact impeding people from leaving their house and driving around as they would nilly-willy, wasting gasoline just to go somewhere. Or maybe a place that they can go and as easily as walk. Anyway, I'd also like to remind our listeners to subscribe to our reminder service by visiting our website and clicking on the subscribe icon. Let me talk a little bit about the price of gasoline for a second before we go on to the other subjects. Because tonight we're going to talk about our education system, about education in general. Philosophically, we're going to talk about education. And I don't want to talk about education as in school education, although we're going to touch on that and really try to analyze the limitations of that. But I would like for everyone to think education just general, of just learning. Learning stuff. We educate ourselves every day, and some people do better jobs than others. And folks, I'd like you to call in 646-652-4620. This is Liberty Talk Radio, and we do need to hear your voice. There is so much talk going on today regarding the high price of fuel. And there is all sorts of recommendations, restricting the oil companies, windfall profit taxes, tariffs on oil coming in from the oil-producing nations. You name it, these politicians want to screw it up. And they can do a good job, folks. Don't doubt for one moment that our politicians are not experts in fouling up the economy. They have always fouled up the economy. They have never boosted the economy. Never once, not in history, in 4,000 years of history that we know of, has the government ever done anything that truly boosted the economy. They have done things that made it appear as if they were boosting the economy. And FDR gets a lot of credit for that. But in fact, he suppressed the economy with all his make-work programs that were unproductive. But that's another story. But here we are, and little, why cannot our politicians just read the Constitution and say, you know, controlling the price of gasoline ain't our job. It is unconstitutional to screw around with gasoline prices. Because when the prices get high, guess what happens, folks? People drive less. There is a lesson there. And the lesson is simple. And here it is. And I've said this before. Our regular listeners know what I'm going to say. And this is not original, by the way. I wish this was original. I would patent this damn thing. The antidote to high prices is high prices. I'll say it again. The antidote to high prices is high prices. That sounds kind of silly, doesn't it? What happens when the price of gasoline goes up? People drive less. They get rid of their gas guzzlers and trade them in for Vespa motor scooters. The scooter shops in my area cannot keep the scooters in stock. People are buying it because they see where the price of gas is going. Now, that's a knee-jerk reaction because they're going to spend thousands of dollars to save a few hundred, and that's silly. And they don't know how to drive a scooter, first of all, in the second place, and they probably go out there and kill themselves. Now, I ride scooters and motorcycles. At least I know what I'm doing, and I've been in accidents. At least I have some experience. But the antidote to high prices is high prices. Very simple. And why our politicians can't allow the marketplace to work is beyond me. Now, what they want to do is they want to take the profits from the oil companies. Now, they can't do that. The oil companies is a private enterprise. The government cannot steal money from corporations just because they think they're making too much money. Now, they are making good money now, and they're going to need it because they cannot find oil anymore, and all the oil that is available is really expensive to find. Now, if I was an oil company, any oil company, foreign or domestic, and the U.S. government says, all right, from now on, we're going to tax you or take all the money above so much money, or we're going to tax you 50% on all your profits above so much, I'd say, fine, I'll ship less fuel, I'll make less fuel, I'll make less money, you make the damn gasoline. Think about that. The oil companies are not in business to supply people with oil, with gasoline. They're in the business, in the oil business, to make money, like everybody else in the world. Everybody else. People in Afghanistan, when they're making things out of their homes and they're selling them in the yards, in the open markets, they are not selling those making those items and selling those items to help the people of their country. They are selling it to make a profit. Very simple. And if the oil companies make too much money, more people will drill. For example, I took a motorcycle ride out to Woodward. That's about 4 hours or 5 hours away from here. And I went to a hotel. I said, well, geez, I'm in the middle of nowhere. Easy to find a room. It was a hotel, Holiday Inn Express. It was a new one. And it was gigantic. I said, wow, I'm going to have my choice of rooms. This is terrific. And I'll probably get a good deal. She said, I'm sorry, we're booked. I said, what do you mean you're booked? You're in the middle of nowhere. Where are these people coming from? She said, they're drilling. Ha ha, ha ha. The price of oil goes up. People drill more. They drill more. There's more oil available. As the supply goes up and the demand goes down, Folks, let me ask you the question. And here's the telephone number, 646-652-4620. First person to call in will get a free Liberty Talk Radio t-shirt. Here's the question. What happens when the supply goes up, demand goes down, what happens to the price? No one's calling. Well, you know the answer to that, don't you? The price goes down. It naturally goes down. And I anticipate at some point the price of gasoline will ease somewhat. Now, it's not going to go back to $1 a barrel, a gallon. And neither are we going to see $45 a barrel of crude. Now, we would if somehow technologically we came up with an alternative and the demand decreased. They are talking now about air compressed cars, where instead of filling up your car with gas, you fill it up with compressed gas. Now, that takes electricity, but it's very efficient. The problem is that getting the right motor combination. And they've been working on this for 30 years, by the way, folks. And they're getting very close to it, where a car works on compressed gas. Air goes in, it's filtered, goes in the engine, comes out clean, and it goes in. How about that, folks? And all you have to do is plug it in and fill up your tanks. They're carbon fiber tanks, so they don't rupture, or they don't explode. They'll crack, but they won't explode. Right? They're under tremendous pressure, and that pressure feeds cylinders, almost similar to our internal combustion engine. There's others that are more similar to Wankel engines. Just phenomenal technology. Now, if that technology takes hold, what will happen to the price of gasoline? Well, it will go down. It will go down because the demand goes down. Now, will someone please write a letter? We're always writing letters to our, being asked to write letters to our congressmen and our senators and whatever, our representatives and our senators, I should say, our congressmen. And we're saying, please tell, will someone write them a letter and talk to them and tell them about the principle of supply and demand? Well, you don't have to because they know that. You see, folks, the reason why they make the decisions they do, because they're not economic decisions, they are political decisions. And when the people we elect start making political decisions, those are the people we should throw out. We should impeach if we have to. But get the bums out. Because they're making decisions based on a faulty premise and for very selfish reasons. And that reason will not help the economy and will not help you and I. All right, enough about gasoline. Anyway, return from San Diego, wonderful trip. My wife really enjoyed it. I scored a lot of points there. She's happy. My wife is happy. What else? Life is good. As my son says, a happy wife is a happy life, right? So right now, life is happy. She had a great time. We really had a super time. And we did something that I never in my wildest dreams expected that I would ever do, because I never thought of it. A good friend of mine out there, his name is Jim. He is a commandant, big guy, right, in the Navy. And he's at the Navy base there in San Diego. And he invited us to join him to attend a welcoming reception on the Kashima. That is a Japanese destroyer and training ship that they were having, because they were doing some joint exercises. So I was on a Japanese warship having sushi. Isn't that terrific? I mean, that is wild. I mean, that is so neat, huh? Anyway, I really enjoyed it. I ate like a pig. I tell you, they had to roll me off that ship. And it was so interesting. What I found interesting is the uniforms that the Japanese Navy wears and ours are almost identical. It was very difficult to tell them apart. And I'm sure if you're a Navy guy, you see all the little nuances. But really, they look exactly. Even the stripes and the way they, the ensign and, captain and whatever, the stripes that go on the shoulders, they're all the same. It was really interesting. It almost looked like it was one Navy. Anyway, what an experience that was. But I'll tell you one thing. Before we get on to education, I do want to talk about my friends because they're really nice people. But they call themselves social democrats. I wish they would just call themselves socialists. I mean, you know, come on. And there was one conversation, and we had no arguments. We don't argue. You know, I just let it go because sometimes it's just not worth it. But I give my 2 cents, and they complain that the libertarian, you know, if things went the way of a libertarian philosophy, you know, there would be panic in the street, the poor would be starving, the rich would be super rich. I mean, it would be like the medieval times, and there would be serfs, and there would be, you know, barons, and no one in between. It would be a catastrophe. They cannot see basic economics. They can't see how the government right now is creating that, you know, by all of its social programs is creating the super rich and the super poor, and the people in between are being squeezed. They cannot see that. They just see that if libertarians came in, the corporations would own everything and we would own nothing and we would all be in the street with, you know, rags on. I mean, it's amazing their philosophy and what their perception is. But she brought up, his wife, Jim's wife, brought up an interesting point. She said, could you imagine if there was not a government-controlled fire department? I said, you know, that's an excellent point. I said, I never studied fire departments. My company does work with fire departments, but I never thought of the fire department being privatized, what the pros and cons are. She says, oh my goodness, there are no pros. It's all cons. She says, it would be a catastrophe. She said, I can guarantee you, she says, people who are not of means, if they had a fire, their houses would burn down. No one would show up. She said, only the mega wealthy would be able to pay for a fire department and pay the firemen to come over in the case there was a fire. She says it would be a catastrophe. All of the poor or all the people without significant means would lose their homes to fire. It would be a catastrophe. She just told me what a catastrophe. She was just almost screaming. And I said, that's interesting. I never studied that before, and I never had, and I really didn't. If I had the answer, I would have. I said, but I'd like to think about it. And she says, oh, but I've learned a lot about libertarianism. I've read a lot about it, and I've listened a lot about it. And she says, it's catastrophe. Well, folks, there's one criticism is when someone says, oh, they read a lot about it. And I should have said, who did you read? And I'm sure she listened to Air America, which is a left-wing Democratic, station. And they, obviously, it's like Democrat, Republican. They're not going to say anything positive about individual responsibility and non-government intervention and all that. So this is where she learns it from. So, and I made a mistake. I should have asked her that. I'll be honest with you. I regret that. But I did keep my mouth shut long enough to say, well, you know, there's got to be an answer here somewhere. And I said, what I will do is let me look into it and then I'll respond. She says, and she sort of laughed like, you know, there, I got you, you know. And I said, well, you know, you may make a good point that there may be certain agencies or activities that need to be, you know, owned by the city or the state because they're common good. I said, yeah, I have no problem with that. I said, you know, I'm a libertarian, but, you know, sometimes there are certain things that are okay, you know, the way they are. So I said, let me think about it. And I said, most likely when I get back to Tulsa, I'll do some research and call you. So the next day, you know, we're driving around, and I said, and she brought it up again. I said, you know, that subject is bothering me because I know nothing about it. But I said, could we walk through the scenario of yours? Can we walk through this catastrophe so I can understand? Because right now we're talking sort of in generalizations and platitudes and all this, and this is wonderful, and this is great, and this is terrible, and that doesn't make any sense to me. I can't put my arms around that. I said, why don't we just start with a fire department in a small town? She said, how about a big city? I said, no, let's start small. Let's just start small. I said, let's not get grandioso. We're in a small town. And let's see what would happen if we can walk through a private fire department versus one that's owned by the city or the state, you know, and controlled, and, you know, the employees of, you know. And she said, fine. I said, well, it's going to be, we have to walk through this. I said, all right, now we're in the small town of Smallville, whatever state, Oklahoma, California, small town, and they have a fire department. And I didn't think of this, by the way. This was not premeditated at all. And I said, okay, now how would that work? I said, wait a minute. Fire departments in small towns aren't owned by anyone. They're volunteer. Are they not? I said, all the small towns I've been in, they have volunteer fire departments. She says, right. I said, no large corporation or even small corporation owns them, do they? She says, no. I said, really, the city doesn't own them because they don't get a salary. They have volunteers. I mean, they have Brit sales and special events so they can get enough money. Now, they may go to the city council and say, we'll need money for a fire truck, and the city council may provide them with some funds for the fire truck. But other than that, they, you know, the city donates money, basically, and the citizens donate money. They have bake sales. They have all sorts of things where they raise funds, you know, for the fire department. And I said, have we seen anything in the newspaper such as, you know, the town of so-and-so burns down to the ground because the city or state wasn't there to protect all the people? She says, no. I said, well, I think that ends that conversation, doesn't it? I said, I think that's an example. And she stood there. She says, well, I guess you're right in that case. Now, she has never said that before. You understand, this is a quantum leap for her to go from, you know, catastrophe, catastrophe, catastrophe to, well, I guess that'll work. And little did she realize that she was agreeing with a libertarian philosophy. People get together and they say, there's a need and we'll do it. No, we don't need some big corporation. No, we don't need some big state or federal subsidies. We do it ourselves. And it works. And it's very efficient. So, I mean, it's interesting when socialists bring up the dogma of state ownership in everything is good for the general public because otherwise corporations would own it, and therefore everyone would suffer, only the rich would get the benefit. You know, that is such hogwash. In fact, right now, it's the exact opposite. Right now, the rich are the ones getting rich because they get the money back to go into office. They give their friends, you know, favors and all this. You and I, we ain't getting squat. And by the way, folks, this is Liberty Talk Radio. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano. I'd like someone to call in, 646-652-4620. In the next couple of minutes, we'll be talking about our education system. I'm getting some other stuff out of my system right now. Anyway, it was a wonderful trip, and there was things learned. And I live in Tulsa, Oklahoma, folks, and I know I have listeners all over the world, but Oklahoma, I have to admit, is not the most exciting city in the world. But you want to know something? It's kind of pretty. I came back, and I thought San Diego was going to be a real pretty place. It's a nice place, you know, but it just ain't pretty. You know, it's a desert, reformed, you know, to house people. And there's a lot of hills and stuff, and they're dirty. You know, they're rough and rocky. And the houses aren't particularly pretty at all. I mean, you need millions of dollars to buy them, but most of them are ugly. I came back to Tulsa with a renewed respect for this town. This is a beautiful, beautiful town. Okay, now, the premise of this program was going to be our education system, or better, we're going to compare education versus indoctrination. This is part two. We did this last Wednesday morning before I left for San Diego, and hopefully I won't be going on too many trips soon, so that I don't have to break the system of broadcasting on Thursday morning at 6:30 a.m. and Sunday evening at 8 p.m. I like to keep on a good schedule, all right? And I hope I do not have to travel too much, very much in the future. Anyway, here we go. when we say education, what do we mean? And maybe more importantly, what do our politicians mean? You see, when our politicians reference education, they reference schools, government-run schools. That is education. That is not education. You know, we need to answer a philosophical and a practical question, I guess. And that is, how do you separate or distinguish or define the role of the parent in a child's education and the role of the school or the role of the state? Think about that. How do you define that? How do you separate that? When a child is born and brought into this world, is the parent given instructions by the state indicating what that parent can or cannot teach that child? Think about that. What can or cannot that parent teach that child? Well, I know it's a rhetorical question, but actually nothing. I mean, there's everything. The parent could teach the child anything. There is no checklist by the government saying this is what you teach them and this is what the government teaches them. Isn't that, just think of that concept. What differentiates education at home from education at school? And the more I thought about that, the clearer it came to me that education in schools is a bad idea altogether. Unless it augments the family. I know this sounds weird because we don't think of it this way. We think, well, you know, at 5 years old, you go to kindergarten, and then 6 years old, you go to first grade, then seventh grade, you know, blah, blah, blah. Then you go to high school, junior high school, and then you go to college, you know, damn it, and you get yourself a college education. You're not going to get a good job. And we think that way. And we've been made to think that way. And it's ridiculous. You see, before a child goes to school, a parent is in charge of teaching the child everything. You know, there's a book, and I did not read this book. Anything I need to know in life, I learned in kindergarten. That's good, probably very valid. In other words, you know, the child, and then it was in the child's home. They're constantly doing what? They're constantly exploring. They're touching things. They're looking at things. They are examining things. They're asking questions after question after question. Their minds are developing. Now, if the parent is ahead of the game, what the parent would do is ensure that kid does not watch any television at all. And I know that's a subject for a different time, and I know there are proponents and opponents of that comment, but no television is good television. Television does nothing for the child. It is a babysitter, and it numbs the mind. It does not educate. And children explore. Now, why every child is so unique and so different? They develop at different rates. There are children who are 5 and 6 years old who are light years ahead of other childs the same age. And it could be because of their upbringing. It could be genetics. It could be physiological. It could be a million reasons. But they're not all the same. But they have some commonality in that they are curious. They are innately curious. Look at a kid when he takes a toy. He looks at it. He turns it upside down. He turns it around. He puts it in his mouth. You know, he shakes it. He throws it on the ground to see what happens when it... He's not being mad. He's not doing a bad thing if he throws a toy on the ground. He wants to know what happens. They are constantly exploring. They're explorers. When children are young, they're all explorers. And then we put them in the regiment of school. And we destroy all of that wonderful imagination, that inquisitiveness, and worst of all, we suppress all that individuality that makes that child different from every other child in the world. Because you see, now he's not an individual in and of himself. He's not a universe in and of himself. He's now a first grader. And he will read pages 1 through 10. And he will memorize this and memorize that. And there goes the imagination. And should they rebel because this is not what they want to learn? They want to learn something else. They're curious about other things. They get punished. And as a result, in major cities around the world, 51.8% of the students in high school wind up graduating. Isn't that a sin? But the question still remains, how do we separate the responsibility of the parent and the responsibility of school? As I mentioned Wednesday morning, there was a circuit court, I believe it was, in California that rendered a decision regarding homeschooling, saying homeschooling should be discouraged or should be illegal because the purpose of schooling is to indoctrinate the children into the to their how did he put it? I'm sorry, I lost the words. Loyalty to the state. You need to indoctrinate the students to be loyal to the state. Now, wait, folks. Wait a minute. Now, that means that when this child is not going to school before the age of five, that means the parents could be in trouble if the parents are free thinkers and don't believe that the child should be indoctrinating the child, that the state should be indoctrinated, that don't believe that the state should be indoctrinating the child. I mean, just... Once you start thinking that way, you find out that you can't have it halfway. You can't have it sort of yes and sort of no. It's either the parent's responsibility or it's entirely the state. That means you have children and then you surrender your children to the state and they're out of your hands. Now, anyone who thinks that way, what does it do? Is it conjures up these images of these communist nations of children, all children going into camps, marching to the same beat, memorizing philosophy of the government and repeating it over and over and over again, and then throwing in death to America, you know. And we that's what it conjures up. But isn't when we say they have allegiance to the state, That's why they need to go to school. Aren't we doing the same thing? Now, if we're doing that, I mean, why isn't that as horrifying? Oh, because, you know, we are the subjects of state-run schools, and what we've been told is that the government is good, and the government provides, and the government would never do that. And we know that's not true. We just know that's not true. Folks, this is Joe Cristiano. This is Liberty Talk Radio, 646-652-4620. I have five lines. I'd love for someone to call in. 646-652-4620. We are talking about education versus indoctrination. This is our second part of this program, second part on the subject. And we're talking about now how the responsibility of the parent. Well, folks, I don't think there's anyone out there who would say that the parents are not responsible for teaching their kids. But we say, well, when we say teaching, we mean, you know, to be good people, to do this or to do that. Well, you can't separate it. You can't say, well, the parents do this. Now we go back to the scorecard. Remember the scorecard I talked about in the beginning? Where the parents would come up with this and that and this and that. This is a checklist. This is what you can tell your children, but this is what you cannot tell your children. You cannot teach your children American history. You cannot give your children books on American history. We will provide those books. You see, the books that you'll buy that are in the library, books that you'll buy at the bookstore, written by historians on what happened back when, will be very different than what your children will learn in school. In school, you learn the whitewash. The bad guys did very bad things to the good guys, the United States, and we went out there and we kicked butt. Aren't we good and powerful? Yay for the United States. Yay. And that's the way our children learn. When, in fact, we should learn about how all governments use their power to create misery around the world. Remember, Tom Clancy said on Kudlow and Kramer back in September 2nd of 2003, this is years ago, he said, what the government is good at is collecting taxes, taking away your freedoms, and killing people. It's not good at much else. I think everyone would agree with that. And then we entrust the government with our schools, but we say they're local. And here's my beef. Our school teachers are all products of the school system. And as a result, they support that system. They're the first to admit that the system stinks. But their response to that, but my class is different. You know, I put my individuality in a class. I work hard. And you know what? And they're absolutely right. They're absolutely correct. They work very hard. They're very dedicated. They work with their students all the way. And then, you know, whatever happens with the system, they just go along with, because that's beyond their purview. And you see, if teachers were really free thinkers, and they should be free thinkers, to force the free thinking amongst our students, which they don't do. That's one thing they don't do well at all. Maybe some do at the early stages, but not later. Because then you have discord among all the students. You have all students going in different directions, learning at different rates, and you can't give a standardized test. And let's talk about standardized tests. How dumb could we be? Standardized. What's a standardized test? Remember, we talked about this kid, these children who are developing at different rates, doing different things, exploring, you know, putting stuff in their mouth, throwing against the wall, not because they're mean, because they want to see what happens when you throw something. They just don't know. They're trying everything out. And all of a sudden, we have a standardized test. And if you were a good boy and girl, and you listened to your teacher preach the government crap that they are told to teach, and you memorize that government crap, and then you can repeat it on a piece of paper, you will graduate with honors. Isn't that wonderful? I think that's wrong. I think it's debilitating. And I think it should be stopped. I think homeschooling or specialized schooling, or schooling that the parents pick. Now, you know, back, let's go back into the early days of America. There was no school system. Each town erected a schoolhouse. People chipped in. You know what? Similar to the fire departments in small towns that we were talking about earlier. How the whole town chips in. They build a fire department, firehouse. You know, they help. They have bake sales and all this other stuff to buy a fire truck. And they do all this. You know, and there's no government involved, basically. I mean, there's the city council involved, and that's Harry, and he's on the fire department. But, I mean, it's really loosey-goosey. And this is the way it was. And what was interesting, what I used to see when I observed these old schoolhouses, you learned that it wasn't one grade. There were kids that are 5 years old in that schoolhouse, and there were kids that were 10 years old, all in the same classroom. And there was none of this, well, I got to sit with the little kids, or, you know, I got to sit with the big kids. I mean, they went there because they needed to learn certain things that their parents were unfamiliar with. And those things were reading, writing, arithmetic, the three R's. Now, back in the old days, the parents didn't have any education, or hardly any education. Most of them were farmers, you know, and ranchers and whatever. And they didn't necessarily know how to read. They didn't understand mathematics very well. I mean, they could do something very basic, but they couldn't teach it. So they worked on a farm. The kids worked on a farm. That's where they learned everything. They learned everything from their parents. And then when they went to the school, they learned, you know, the reading and the writing and whatever. Today, we have aids that will help the parents teach the children to read. And when the children learn to read, we should allow them to read what they want to read. Now, I already hear it. There's no one on the line. This is Liberty Talk Radio. I'm Joe Cristiano, your host. This is Liberty Talk Radio, 646-652-4620. Please, someone call in and interrupt me. I'm getting tired. Come on, it's a Sunday evening. I'm sure it doesn't cost you any more gas to call in. 646-652-4620. This is Liberty Talk Radio. We're talking about education versus indoctrination. But I can hear people say, oh, yeah, and then a kid will read nothing but comic books. And my response to that is, good. Let them read comic books. But if they are a proficient reader, they'll read through a comic book in a matter of an hour or a half hour or 20 minutes, depending on the size of the comic book. Now, what are they going to do? They read for 20 minutes. What are they going to do? Read another comic book. What are they going to do then? Read another comic book. I would let them read all the comic books they want. I would buy them all the comic books they want. Because they're reading. Their minds are working. They're looking at pictures. They're looking at words. They're looking. They're following stories with their minds. Let's think of this. Let's say he reads comic books all day long for 10 years, and just all he does is read comic books, and he becomes a writer. Is that all bad? Or is it better he sits in school and reads stuff that he doesn't want to read? It doesn't. He fails his test. He fails out of school. And now he's on the street. Folks, we have the wrong impression about education. Absolutely the wrong impression. We have to start thinking about education in a manner which develops the mind of the person. Now, I don't care what a person reads, as long as they read. You know, we were with a couple, and a person said, oh, I read all the time. And I was kind of surprised because this person had no conversational skills whatsoever. I mean, they could not carry on a conversation at all. And I thought, this person doesn't read. People who read are great conversationalists. It's amazing. There's a direct correlation. Now, you may not like the person, and they may not have a nice person, but when they read, they're interesting. They have this database of knowledge, and they're inquisitive, you know? And I said, You read at the time when this woman said, "Oh, I read all the time." I went, "You read?" And the way I responded was like, "I don't believe that you read, but I'm sure it came across that way." I admitted I bit my tongue. I said, "Oh, you read?" And she said, "Yeah." I said, well, that's great." I said, "What do you read?" She says, "Well, I read novels." I said, "Oh, what kind?" She says, and she told me what they were. I'm not sure what she told me what they were. I don't recall. She said, "But, you know, I get to read a lot of books because I just read the main portions, you know, the story. You know, I don't read all the fill-in work." I said, "Well, what do you mean?" She said, "Well, when they describe the room or the place that they're at, or, you know, what the guy's saying, I skip all that. I just get onto the side so I understand the story." Folks, this person was very boring, had nothing to say, because this person does not read. Now, anyone that I know that reads is fascinating to sit with. Absolutely fascinating. They have and they usually have expertise or knowledge or information in areas that I am totally ignorant of. I mean, I know nothing, and I'm just fascinated, and I ask millions of questions. I feel like Edward R. Murrow, you know, asking people questions. But I do. I ask tons of questions. I go, "Wow, I don't know anything about that. That's fascinating. How did you get involved in that?" You know, and you don't have to go to school for that. You know, no students like to go to school. They hate school. They just can't wait to get out. And all they do is cause trouble. Now, some of them are very obedient, and I know I have people in my family just very obedient. They go to school, they memorize everything, come out, and they can't think their way through a paper bag. They cannot think at all. But they got very high marks. I want people to think. Because we have to ask, not only what is the role of education for the parent versus the state, and the state should be zero, or there should just be those areas where the parent says, "Hey, I need help here. This kid has an interest, shows an interest in physics because he wants to know how things work and whatever." And if there are courses in physics, I think that's great. And then the parent should be able to choose the school where physics is taught the best, you know, where they have the proper laboratories and whatever, so they can develop the mind further and not stifle the mind. There shouldn't be this elementary school where they teach the same crap. You know, it often bothered me. We teach history every single year in school for 12 years. For 12 years, we teach history in elementary school and high school. And when kids graduate, you ask them to pick the United States on a map. They can't even tell you where it is. Isn't that amazing? There's an ad on TV, I think it's a Federal Express ad, where the guy says, "Well, Bob, let's start with China." And he doesn't know where China is on the map, and he winds up ripping the map. It's a really funny ad. It's a great ad, you know. I don't remember the... It must not be a very good ad, because I don't remember what it was for. And it was... But it underscored the fact that we don't know anything when we get out of school. And so we don't know where China is. That's fine. But we know something else. The problem is with the people in school is that they don't know where China is, but they don't know anything else. They don't know anything. Because we shut off their minds. They're trapped shut. Those doors are traps. They're shut, and they're not opening again. It's going to take a pry bar, a bomb, to open up those minds. And yet, we do that intentionally. So, when we ask the question, what is the role of the parent versus what is the role of the state? Once we start asking those questions, we find that the state has no role. It's the parent and only the parent. Now, there's going to be this chorus of people saying, "What if the parents don't know anything and they're dumb and stupid, this and that?" Don't worry, a child will eventually develop the way they want to develop. They will develop. And if the parents are bad at home and they bring them to schools, what happens? You have bad schools. And if you have bad schools, you have bad students. And what happens? There's no parent-teachers meetings. There's no nothing. Where you see that is in the lower income areas where there's less emphasis placed on school, and the rate of graduation is only 25%. 25%! Where's the outrage on that? And half of these kids' parents are on welfare of one form or another. And then of those that graduate, the 25% that graduate, they can't read. So by letting the kids develop on their own, is it any worse? No, I think it'd be much better. And half of these kids don't go to school anyway. Of course, you have to dismantle the social system that we have now, the socialized welfare system that we have now. Folks, you know, it's all really inextricably intertwined, as they say. But let's stay on the education system. Why is it that we don't really even know what the purpose of education is? What is the actual purpose of this thing? Oh, it's for a more productive America? Oh, crap. How are we going to say more productive America? How do we measure that? The politicians will say that. But do the politicians want students to be free thinkers? Just think about that for a minute. And they're always saying that we have to improve our education. Meaning more government schools. Improve our education. Well, what if we did somehow was able to improve our education system? And students started to think as individuals. Think, as they say, outside the box on everything. Were as inquisitive as in their sophomore year of high school as they were when they were 2 years old. What do you think would happen? Do you think we would have anyone, assuming in a perfect society where everyone was a free thinker, did their own thing, became the best that they can be in what they wanted to do, do you think we would have two political parties today? No, no, no. Because the politicians would not get away with anything. It would be as if a politician is talking to me. They're wasting their breath. They know I know the scorecard. They know I know the game. So they know they cannot fool me. They try, and they have, but not any longer. But what if we all felt that way? Well, these politicians would be out of business. Well, if the politicians would be out of business, if in fact they would be out of business, why would they promote better education? Well, they don't promote better education. They promote better schools. In other words, more money for the welfare state that will go into government schools so that they can get reelected, and they get the vehicle for getting reelected is showing how much money has been dedicated to the school system, and which indicates how much they care. That's the way the education system works. Folks, we need to dismantle the education system, privatize it all. No government subsidies, no nothing. Whatever the parents want to do, let them do. If a kid says, geez, you know, welding really turns me, I really would love to be a welder, be a welder, be a good welder. But before they do that, teach them to read. Read basic arithmetics and teach them to write. Folks, I go to factories. I used to go to factories. My company goes to factories now. I don't do that anymore. Thank heavens I don't do that anymore. I didn't like doing it then. I still don't like doing it. But I go to factories. I never forget this one company. They made railroad spikes. Now, that's a very crude business. Railroad spikes ain't high tech. It was assembly line. And I had the night shift. I had to be there like at 3 o'clock in the morning or something like that to get the night shift. And I got there, you know, on time, sat in the cafeteria, and a whole bunch of guys came out, and they sat down. They had to fill out their papers, you know, their medical papers. And they just stared at me. And I said, well, does anyone need a pen? They said, yes. And I gave them pens. I said, you have any questions? So they still stood there. And only one person was writing out of several. And I said, you need to fill out the applications, you know, before we start. And one guy came up to me. He said, can you do me a favor? I said, sure. What is it? He said, can you help us fill out the application? And I understood what he meant. What he was saying is that we can't read. Now, these were not young kids. These were not third graders. I mean, these were men in their middle years. I wanted to cry. I felt so badly for these guys. I wasn't mad. I wasn't angry. I wasn't snotty. I mean, I just felt awful for these guys. I mean, absolutely awful. Could you imagine going all through your life not being able to read and having to fake it? Well, I sat down and I said, all right, fellas, let me do this. I think it'll go faster if I just ask the question and then we mark either yes or no. That'll be the box on the left or the right, you know. Made it very simple for them, and they were very appreciative. They were appreciative because I did not talk down to them, and I helped them out. I wanted to quit my job. I wanted to sell the company, and I wanted to start an adult reading program. I didn't, but that's what I wanted to do. You know, folks, our government doesn't want us to be an educated public. They don't want us to be free thinkers. They don't want us to be individuals because we would never vote for them. So all this rhetoric about better education or better schools is rhetoric. And it's very selfish. And we may have better schools, we may have more computers in schools, but we won't be any smarter for it. Because our politicians don't want our children educated for the same reason that the parents want them educated. The purposes are different. And that's why when we talk about what is a separation, what is the role of the parent versus the state, they're very different. And that's the true answer. They're very, very different. I'm going to sign off here now. I think I talked enough about education. I hope I sparked, when people listen to this broadcast, I do hope that they take the time to write me email and give me their opinion. And I'm not looking for people just to agree with me. I want their honest opinion. I called a school teacher right before the broadcast, and I called really late, and I apologize for this. Her name was Susan, and I wanted her to call in, but she wasn't in, and I wanted her to call in. I would love to hear from school teachers, but I'm sure school teachers don't listen to this program. School teachers don't do those things. It's unfortunate. They're nice people, and they're very dedicated, but they're products of government schools. And that's a shame. This is the end of tonight's broadcast. We'd like to thank Ranch Shakers Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends. And let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. Remember, you are either allowing your liberties to be taken away or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there is no middle ground. And remember, don't steal. The government hates competition. Until next time, and that'll be Thursday morning at 6:30 a.m., stay well. Stay tuned.